You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
It was the year of fire.
The year of destruction.
The year we took back what was ours.
It was the year of rebirth.
The year of great sadness.
The year of pain.
And a year of joy.
It was a new age.
It was the end of history.
It was a year everything changed.
The year is 2261. The place, Babylon 5.
Who am I? I am Susan Ivanova, Commander. Daughter of Andrei and Sophie Ivanov. I am the right hand of vengeance. And the boot that is gonna kick your sorry ass all the way back to Earth. I am death incarnate. And the last living thing that you are ever going to see.
It's over because we've decided it's over. Now get the hell out of our galaxy.
Hello, and welcome to the Epsilon 3, a Babylon 5 rewatch podcast. Each week, we review an episode of the 1990s sci-fi TV classic Babylon 5. This week, Season 4, Episode 15, No Surrender, No Retreat. I'm Paul.
I'm Dan.
I'm Sean.
And we are the Epsilon 3.
And the synopsis. Provoked by President Clark's latest actions, Sheridan leads the White Star Fleet against the Earth Force to liberate Proxima 3. Written by JMS and directed by Mike Vigar, this episode was released on May 26, 1997, and takes place from September the 2nd to September the 4th, 2261. And the guest stars, Maria Mitzman-Gavin as Commander Sandra Levitt, Richard Grant, no, not that one, as Captain Edward McDougan, Ken Jenkins as Captain Trevor Hall, Skip Stelrecht as Guard, Neil Bradley as Commander Bob Philby. Uncredited are Stephen Austin Skordelis as Pakmarar Ambassador and Bill Blair as Alien. So, guys, what did we think of this episode?
Well, how could we not love it? It takes place right around my birthday, which is September 3rd. So immediately I'm going to love it, right? So that's fantastic. and John has finally had enough. As he says, enough is enough. I like to see him take charge instead of just have the plot happen to him. So that's pretty great. We get a proper battle, lots of fighting. And this is what we've been waiting for. Like, come on, let's get going here. So I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Good. Dan, what did you think?
Yeah, got a bit of action in a civil war that I'm actually invested in. That's quite nice after last week, where it was Minbari War that ended and no one really cared. This actually feels like it's been building up for ages, and because it has, they actually put the time in. So it felt a little bit more cathartic, and it made more sense that this was happening. And it was nice that, you know, they were really desperately trying to work out all of their intelligence, you know, who should we fire on, who we shouldn't fire on. It added a bit more tension than just, you know, our ships have, getting shot at and we've lost so-and-so. It actually felt like there were genuine stakes behind it. And it's Sheridan doing what he does best, not necessarily about winning battles by shooting. He outthinks his opponents and then tries to bring them around the table at the end. So yeah, I enjoyed it.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm the same. It was a more meaningful episode. This is when we are starting towards the fight against Earth and trying to get to Mars and the show is fighting it on two fronts, but we shall get into that as we review the episode. And we start with the captain's personal log.
Captain's personal log, September 2nd, 2261. Enough is enough.
Sheridan has called all the ambassadors to a meeting. Since the White Stars have been patrolling the borders of the non-aligned worlds, the number of incidences has decreased by 70%. Everyone seems happy with the outcome, But now there is a price to pay.
In the latest attack authorized by President Clark, 10,000 civilians were killed as an example to others. We can no longer tolerate this behavior.
In exchange with the continuing patrols along those borders, the mutual defense treaties with Earth are now null and void.
Most of your governments have mutual defense treaties with Earth. As of right now, in exchange for our continued patrol along your borders, I'm declaring those treaties null and void.
I have no problem with this.
Jakar agrees with Sheridan, as Earth never helped when the non-lion worlds and Narn were being attacked by the Centauri and the Shadows.
You have been here for us from the beginning. During their war with the Minbari, I supervised arms sales to Earth. They promised to help us when we needed them. But where was Earth when our borders were being attacked? Where was Earth when the Shadows were rampaging across our territories? They did nothing! We owe them nothing in return.
Thank you, Jakar.
Ivanovo wants one destroyer assigned from each of the non-aligned worlds to help in the defense of Babylon 5. Sheridan says they're going to take back Proxima 3, then Mars, then their home. Or die trying. Although it's actually his home and none of the non-aligned worlds is home, so what are they invested in exactly?
Well, you know, Earth is the center of the universe.
Well, of course.
Very true.
The sun goes around the Earth. So it's natural that everything else goes around the Earth. Marcus arrives at the war room, and he's got it. And it's current. It's as current as they can make it. Oh, sorry. He has information on the whereabouts of Clark's forces. They have set up a blockade around Proxima 3. The Heracles and the Pollux are there, and there are two destroyers that shot down the civilian ships. Sheridan says they must be new and still loyal to Clark. Sheridan asks Marcus to find out if any of the destroyers are holding back shooting on civilian targets, which means they may be loyal to Babylon 5's cause. Sheridan asks Franklin to reactivate the frozen telepaths that they have been keeping in storage for a few episodes now. He doesn't necessarily want them now, but defrost them later ready for use. You should always make sure that your telepaths are fully defrosted before using.
Important.
Yeah, very true.
Sheridan says that once they attack the ships that are against them, then they are all in. No surrender, no retreat.
Forgive up, never surrender.
Once we pull the first trigger, we can't hesitate to pull the next one, because they sure won't. Well, once we're in, we're in. No surrender, no retreat.
Never give up, never surrender.
Veer has nodded off, but the door chime wakes him up from a bad dream. It's Mr. Garibaldi, who has some business with Londo, but he's not here. Veer tells him about Sheridan's plans to fight Earth and asks if Mr. Garibaldi will sign up again to fight alongside him. Garibaldi says no, he will never fight along Sheridan, but he will fight against Earth in his own way.
Ivanova to all fighter squadrons. Adjust friend or foe systems to new frequencies every 24 hours. You'll check in with Lieutenant Corwin or myself for the code of the day. Once we're in combat situations, you will not accept any order that does not use the proper codes, even if it seems to come from Captain Sheridan or myself. Earth Force has our voice records on file and could simulate false or misleading orders. CNC out.
So from now on, I guess the operational phrase is trust no one.
No. Trust Ivanova, trust yourself. Anybody else? Shoot him.
And the looks that they got.
I thought, like, the other guy was like, you know you can trust me, right? Like, that's okay, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Corwin was definitely going to shoot him.
So does that mean I shoot Corwin? What does it? I trust myself. I trust Ivanova.
I feel like we haven't seen Corwin for quite a while.
Yeah,
this is the first time we've seen him in this season, because I can't remember him being in any of the others.
It's true. Yeah, It has been a while.
Maybe they suddenly found him in an elevator that got stuck between floors. And oh, he's still here. Sheridan is setting up a diversion. He is sending three white stars to Earth to make it look as though they are reconnaissance ships preparing for a full-scale invasion. In the meantime, they will attack Proxima 3. I think that was right. I can't remember. Marcus is already in hyperspace around Proxima 3, waiting for the signal to attack. He's talking to the resistance on Proxima 3, who send up some information about the destroyers who have not been shooting at civilian targets. Just then, there is shooting in the background. The resistance leader says they'll have to take down the transmitter, as President Clark has sent down more forces recently and they can no longer continue to send transmissions. He tells Marcus to get down here as soon as he can. Mallory visits Jakar in his quarters, which is the first time this has ever happened.
Enter.
Hello, Jakar. I don't believe I have ever been in your quarters before.
Unless you count a cell on Centauri Prime. I apologize for the lack of chains. The cleaning service must have removed them.
It has much the same feeling as your world. Dry, red, and depressing.
He's not come here to spar with Jakar, but talk to him.
Isn't it amazing how quickly we fall into familiar patterns as soon as we come into one another's orbit? Like comets that flare when they get too near the sun. I did not come here to spar with you, Jakar. I came to talk to you.
He recognizes the sacrifice that Jakar has made to save the Centauri people and thanks him for it, although Jakar refuses the thanks and his respect.
How is the eye?
It sees.
Good. Good. These last few years have been very difficult for both of us, Jakar. Harder on you, perhaps. But as the humans say, it has not exactly been a picnic for me either.
Mallory says that he has instructed his government to throw their full support behind Sheridan's plans to attack Earth, and he hopes that Jakar will do the same with Narn in a joint statement.
I have no illusions that you did what you did, endured what you endured for the good of my people. You sacrificed your dignity, your pride, your eye to help free Narn. But still in the process, you did help my own world. And I never thanked you for that.
I have no interest in your thanks.
I did not think that you would. But it is there anyway.
Mallory offers a humble apology to Jakar, saying that he has treated his friend in a bad way.
As I said, a hard year.
Yes. Hard year.
What you said before about the chains, that was unkind, Jakar. When I saw you in that cell, beaten, chained.
And hopes to make amends and offers a drink and a toast to the humans who have helped them find a bridge between their two people.
As I said, we have never been friends. We will never be friends. There is too much blood between us, too much history. But I did feel for you as much as I did not want to. In the beginning, it was little more than the sympathy one might feel for any trapped animal. But in time, I came to respect you.
Jakar, however, refuses the drink.
Your respect matters to me even less than your thanks.
You are not going to give me even an inch, are you? I promised to free Narn if you cooperated. I could have easily changed my mind, but I kept my promise. Surely that entitles me to something.
Was there something else you wanted to say?
You may not believe this, Jakar.
What an uncomfortable scene this was. You could feel the tension.
But all I ever wanted is what is right for my world. I am a patriot. As you are. I have made some very poor choices in the last 2 years because I did not think those choices almost destroyed my world and yours. That is a humbling realization, Shakar.
Like, these actors are so good.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, yeah. Yes.
If with a single wrong word, I can become the enemy, do I any longer really understand who the enemy is? I have spoken with my government. We will not remain neutral in the matter of Sheridan's war with Earth. I have convinced them to throw our official support to Sheridan.
How you could expect Shakar to accept any apologies for what Malari has done. But you can see that Malari is definitely sincere and contrite about what he has done.
If the Narn were to do the same in a joint statement, it might help. If two forces recently at war with one another can agree on this, perhaps it might help to convince the others.
Why?
Because while I do not know who the enemy is any longer, I do know who my friends are.
But it's, where does it, where do you go from here?
And that I have not done as well by them as I should. I hope to change that. I hope to do better. Before war broke out between our governments, you bought me a drink. I wish to return the favor.
I was, because I couldn't quite remember the scene from the previous time I'd watched it. I couldn't remember whether he was actually going to, Malari was going to get out the door and walk away, or whether Shakar was going to call him back and say, no, here, I will take that drink.
For the first time in 100 years, we have something in common beyond hatred. I find that most extraordinary. And so, a drink to the humans. And to the bridge they created between us, in the hope for a better future for both our worlds.
When Malari did walk out, I thought, oh my goodness, no, it's real. But that, but Shakar's just turned down a huge, huge offer to make peace, which he, you know, as a previous ambassador, should really take that on the chin and say, yes, I'll do it for the good of the future. But I'm not happy with you as a person. But yeah. Also, he's turning his back on Sheridan as well, because he's not signing up to help Sheridan fight. And I thought that was quite unusual. I thought Shakar really should have seen sense at that point.
Too much pride. Mm.
Sheridan is addressing the pilots, and he says they now have the information they need to attack Proxima 3. And will attack in 3 waves, pull their forces apart, and surround them with superior firepower. The Heracles and the Pollux are considered hostile targets, as they have fired on civilians, but the Nemesis and the Vesta have gone to great lengths to avoid shooting at civilians, and they are considered to be friendly. Sheridan leads the White Stars to Proxima 3, with Marcus at his side. He sends the first unit of 3 White Stars as bait, and the Heracles picks up the 3... ships orbiting Proxima on the far side of the planet. Captain Hall of the Heracles sends the Nemesis and the Pollux to investigate. Sheridan sends in the second unit, and the Heracles picks up multiple ships coming in through the jump point. Captain Hall recognizes them as Sheridan's ships, which he has never seen before, but has heard a lot about them. He sends out 2 wings to intercept them. Just then, a message comes in from John Sheridan, and the signal is originating from behind the Heracles. Captain Hall orders the Vesta to engage the rear targets, but Captain McDougan from the Vesta hails Sheridan and tries to dissuade him from his course of action.
This is Captain Edward McDougan of the Vesta, a hostile vessel.
Mac, what the hell are you doing? Maintain radio silence.
Mackie, long time no see.
John, get your tail out of here. This isn't going to work.
Power lock, can you give me capacitor charge?
On like it or not, Proxima 3 is under Earth jurisdiction. Can't allow them to secede, whoever's in office.
They broke away after Clark started bombing civilian targets.
What's the rule about following an illegal order?
You don't.
John and Mackie have a chat.
We're not involved. We haven't attacked anyone.
But you're about to.
Any action you take in support of an illegal order makes you an accomplice of that order. Ah, come on, Mackie. President Clark is out of control. He's got you out here on an illegal mission.
Back at the Academy, you used to pose moral conflicts for us as part of our training. You said that soldiers aren't machines. They have to think. They have to decide if an order is moral or not.
But what does your conscience tell you?
But the Heracles opens fire. Sheridan orders all of his forces to fire at will, and all hell breaks loose. However, the Vesta hangs back despite a direct order from Captain Hall on the Heracles. Hall promotes the commander of the Vesta to captain and orders him to take McDougan into custody, which he does. The Vesta then attacks Sheridan, but a message then comes through from Mackie, telling them that the crew has revoked the commander's promotion and they are non-combatant, just as the Juno pulls away as well. The Pollux shoots a White Star, which is damaged and flies into the engine compartment of the Pollux, destroying the destroyer. The Nemesis is severely damaged and is offering to surrender. Sheridan then issues a warning to the Heracles that if they don't surrender and return to Proxima III, to its rightful government, they will be destroyed. Captain Hall does not believe that he will harm him and will not surrender. His commander, however, believes he will do what he says and removes Captain Hall from the bridge. Then she surrenders. Sheridan gathers all of the captains of the ships onto a White Star and offers them three options.
Option one. You and your crews can return home. They won't stop you. Sooner or later, the Heracles and her crew will have to answer for their actions before a military tribunal. But that's not our problem for now. Option two. You can stay here and help protect Proxima III from further retaliation by President Clark. And option three, you can come with us. Join the fight.
The captains say they need to talk it over. Malari is having a drink at the bar by himself when he is joined by Shakar, who takes the drink and drinks it. He tells Malari to issue a joint statement and he will sign his name, but not on the same page. Although Malari does note that they drink from the same glass. The captains have made their choices.
The others have decided. Commander Levitt is going to retire from the field. He's going to take the Heracles to Beta 9 for repairs. Just going to keep Captain Hall under house arrest until this is over. One way or the other.
And the rest?
Eklund is going to stay behind and help with the defense of Proxima. Kagawa, I want to sign on with you. And so do I.
And we see Mr. Garibaldi leaving Babylon 5 for Earth, and he has no plans to return. So that scene with Shakar at the bar is a clever compromise, I think. It says that he won't put his name on the same piece of paper as Malari because he still doesn't like Malari, but he will issue the statement. A joint statement to say that they will do what they can to help the efforts against Earth. So therefore, he has committed him and his species, if you like, to join the war for the better, for the greater good. So he does redeem himself in my mind there.
Mm-hmm. You know what else will redeem you? This promo for another podcast right here on ESO Network.
I love that Star Trek does what adventure programs do. It's fun characters going on adventures wearing colorful outfits, but it tries to be more than that. It tries to say something more about humanity and tries to encourage us to be better people.
I love that it gives a really positive and really hopeful view of the future.
I like that you never know what you get with Trek, from Captain Pike to Picard to Captain Proton.
I like the Ferengi.
Earth Station Trek, a show where we talk about Star Trek from the early days on NBC to the future on Paramount Plus and everywhere in between.
Very good. Okay, moving on to the trivia. The name of this episode, No Surrender, No Retreat, is also the season's title, indicating the importance of this episode. I hadn't realized, actually, that they do title the series, so
What I will do is I will pretty quickly go on here. And I will give you the other seasons.
Oh, look at this. I'm looking at my DVD case right now. And yeah, right at the bottom here, no surrender, no retreat.
No retreat.
There you go, you see.
And if the other ones were in this room, I could tell you what they all said.
If I could be bothered to get up and go into the next room, I could do the same. But I've also got it here. So season one is Signs and Portents, which is episode 13 of the first season. The season two is The Coming of Shadows. And as we know, that is episode 9 of season two. And Point of No Return is season three. And Point of No Return is episode 9. We've mentioned No Surrender, No Retreat. And season five is The Wheel of Fire, which I believe, he says, scrolling through, is episode 19. So there you go.
I wonder if we gave good ratings for all those episodes now. Like, were they indicative of their season? Were they our favourites? That's interesting. Something for another time. There we go.
You think I could do it now?
You could. Let's do it. Let's figure it out.
That. Okay, so Signs and Portents.
Because now the pressure's on for us to like this episode for the season.
Signs and Portents. Oh, yes, was one of our favorites. In fact, Dan, you gave this a 5.
Oh, okay.
Dan's favorite and my favorite as well from the first season. Sean gave it a 4.25. So there you go.
Not bad.
Average episode for Sean. Next one is The Coming of Shadows. There you go. It's IMDb's favorite. It's our average favorite. It's Dan's favorite, Sean's favorite, and I gave it a 4.25. So you give it a 4.5 and 4.75.
Wow.
So, top 10 episode. Scroll down to the next one, which is Point of No Return. Point of No Return. Well, it's high up in the ratings. We give it a 4.42, which again, Dan has scored it 4.75. I gave it a 4.55 and Sean gave it a 3.95. So there you go.
Not bad.
And what do we see? This one, No Surrender, No Retreat. Well, we're about to find out what we give that. Not before. We finish off the trivia. Don't click on that button. When the EAS Heracles sends out a scout, Star Fury, it's a later model that should have a two-man crew, but inside view of the cockpit and pilot indicates the older version of Star Fury with one pilot. Maybe they just have some old ships they need to have, you know, use in the war.
Just lazy.
Yeah. Sean, are there any Star Trek connections?
As a matter of fact, there are. We've got Skip Stelrecht, who played Guard, on the episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, The Naked Now. He played an engineering crewman.
He did.
Very exciting. And
he gets all the big parts, doesn't he?
All the big parts. So not only was he a guard, he was a crewman. But we also have Ken Jenkins, who played Trevor Hall in the most famous episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, Evolution. He played Dr. Paul Stubbs, the one where Wesley loses the nanites. And Paul Stubbs, he's a very exciting man. He plays entire seasons of baseball in his head.
Well, yes. Okay, ratings. So let's find out if we did like this episode or not. IMDb have given this a 9 out of 10. Now, we like to give our ratings out of jump gates, and we do out of 5 jump gates for Babylon 5. Sean, what did you rate this episode as?
Well, I originally wrote down 4.25, but you know what? I agree with IMDb. It was great. We had all kinds of cool stuff and battles and Star Furies and taking back what was ours. So I'll give it a 4.5.
Okay, that sounds fair. Dan?
Any episode is better when you've got Jakar and you've got Londo in it. And we had both of those things. And we had a good scene with Veer. It felt like ages since we've seen Veer as well. And obviously, you know, it was part of Garibaldi's story, which we're not as engaged with lately. But, you know, he had this moment where he's obviously turned to alcohol and he's falling asleep with drinks in his hand. So there was that as well. Then all the stuff I said at the very beginning of the episode, like, you know, the war and fighting and Sheridan doing his best. And he's sort of setting up what will be next week with the telepaths and all this sort of stuff. So it's there's intrigue. There's everything. It makes sense why the name of this is the name of the season. I'm also going to go 4.5.
Wow. Okay, so ironically enough, you've already given two fives out, so this doesn't actually rate as your best episode.
No.
And for some reason, it doesn't quite get into the top 10 either.
Ooh, interesting.
Which is interesting. But yes,
it was good. I mean, admittedly, there have been better episodes.
Yes.
So I suppose I can see where I'm coming at, where past me came from. I can see that.
The Long Night and Into the Fire were two very good episodes.
They were very good episodes.
All rated highly, so yeah. But 4.5 is sort of a middle episode for you. So there you go. It's interesting. This episode, I'm with you both on this. I'm a little bit more with Sean because I think the Jakar redeeming himself after, you know, first of all, disappointing me. Great scene just at the bar. You know, gives it a full total of one. That, you know, because yes, he does. He picks up the Centauri's drink and he drinks it from the glass. So they've shared a drink, not just taken a glass and poured himself a drink. He shared the glass. That's a huge thing. And Malari looks at it and, you know, obviously spots that. Veer, yeah, anything with Veer in is always good anyway. And just the action shots, the planning, the thoughts of Sheridan as he's, you know, trying to convince his friends he doesn't want to shoot on them and all this type of thing. So yeah, I think I'm going to give it slightly higher than Sean. I'm going to go 4.75. This is one of my top 10 episodes. I think it's really, really good. So our average for that is 4.58 in total.
Nice.
Okay. So I think that's it. Join us again next week when we will be discussing Season 4, Episode 16, The Exercise of Vital Powers.
This is Commander Susan Ivanova bringing you the voice of the Resistance. Today, elite forces dispatched from Babylon 5 engaged a destroyer group stationed at Proxima 3. Both sides endured heavy losses, but we can announce that Proxima 3 has been liberated from the forces occupying it. I repeat, Proxima 3 is free. Many of the destroyers enforcing the blockade have now joined forces with our ships. The campaign to retake Earth has begun. As a result, we send this plea to all cruisers and carrier groups that have chosen to stand down rather than execute the illegal orders of President Clark. Join us. We will keep this channel open 24 hours a day. If you want to make a stand for Earth, now is the time.
If you have any thoughts on this episode, why not send in some feedback to the epsilon3@gmail.com. That's 3 spelled T-H-R-E-E, not the number. Or you can find us on our Facebook page. Just search for the Epsilon 3.
Well, if you have any other problems, any other questions at all, just ask.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.